I'm an old man. I'm 70 years of age. I've been a Christian for half that time. I have had several controllerships and worked for different companies. Worked for Halliburton. I worked for Gearhart. I worked for Central Industrial Supply, Domino's Pizza. I was their controller for a while. I've worked all over, and mostly handling other people's money. Quite honestly. I have found that working hard is important because that's the way you make more money. I've learned that I like to have more rather than less, and I like to have it sooner than later. There's nothing wrong with wanting to be rich or wanting to have money. Nothing wrong with that, as long as that doesn't become your focal point of your life. I have seen God working in my life at different times whenever I've made lots of money. I've owned my own company and turned around and sold it, made lots of money, that kind of thing. I, myself and three other guys, we developed some combat pistol sights that use tritium. That's a gas that glows, a radioactive gas that glows at night. And we figured out how to make adjustable pistol sights and allows our police departments to have better weapons for to fight criminals and all that kind of stuff. And then we came up with a shotgun sight called a ghost ring. And we used that, our SEAL teams used that shotgun sight on their shotguns. And we had another company come in and decided they wanted to buy us, and they offered us such a good deal that we let them buy us. That's when I went to grad school again and got my PhD, was after that. But I've been a member of Southwest Christian Church in Fort Worth for 30 years. I've been an elder there for 25 years. I was their treasurer for 25 years. So I know something about money in regards to church. I know church is just like any other business, quite frankly, when it comes to money. You can't operate it without it. And I found that most churches spend every penny they get instead of thinking about the future. And they usually fight with their controller, such as myself, who is usually a very conservative individual in terms of financial considerations and not wanting to spend a whole lot of money. But my observations continue to amaze me. I just recently retired from my eldership at our church. I'm going to let the younger guys get in there and do it for a while. But I want to tell you that as you get through school and you start getting jobs, you'll be making more and more money. And there's nothing wrong with that. They like to, there's a myth, especially for your ministerial students, that you need to be in the starvation area of income. It seems to me it's almost unfair the way we tend to want to have our ministers suffer, you know, financially and not have a full and complete life and have to struggle through life. So one of the things that I work with in my church is I had worked with our ministers trying to get them to set up retirement programs and things like that so that when they retired, they would have some money to fall back on. There are tax situations for young ministers where you can, if you're foolish enough to do it, I don't think you should do it, and that's my personal opinion, you talk to your financial guy, is opt out of Social Security. You know, you if you're a minister, you have that right. And you have the right to pay the 15% where you pay both sides if you want as being self-employed. But I would recommend that you don't do that, that you have the church pay their half and you pay your half. And that way, when you get ready to retire, when you're 65, 70 as I am, you'll be ready to have enough money to be comfortable with when I'm hoping who knows what's going to happen with this economy and the way that our government's fighting right now, trying to figure out who's going to be on first and who's going to be on second. But one of the things I have learned over the years as an individual and as a Christian, that we have certain responsibilities put upon us by God. You know, it talks in the Bible about the tithe, and we can get into an intellectual discussion or debate about what that really means. Some people will tell you that the tithe is a representative of the whole bit, where you're not just 10% of what you make. God wants all of you. You know, He wants the whole body. He wants the whole mind. He wants the whole soul. And that's true. But also, He wants 10% of your earnings. because that's roughly what it used to take to run a church. Actually, when you sit down, and I over the years, I've been amazed that if the congregation, no care what size it is, will give 10% of their income, we make it through fairly comfortably. I've had a couple of years where I've made really big bucks. My best year, I made $350,000. I made some bonus money when I was controller for an elevator company over in Fort Worth. I've never done that again. Believe me, that's a freak thing, but it happened. And we were building a building at our church. And our contractor ran off with $175,000 of our money, and we couldn't finish our building. So I was fortunate. God had given me this, and so I gave most of it to the church so we could finish our building. You know, it's just amazing the way God works through our lives regarding our incomes. So what do churches do with money? What do you think churches do with money? Anybody? Yes, sir. Pay their bills. What kind of bills? What do you do? What do you think your church?
Missions.
Okay, pays bills, missions. Yeah, we have four members on our staff at church. Ministers. We have children's minister. We have family life minister. We have a youth minister. Graduated from here. We have our senior minister. He's a young guy. He's in early 30s. He's learning. He's a very good preacher. Sometimes he's kind of hard to follow. He's kind of intellectual, and so you have to sit back and think, well, two or three days later after I go home and I'm thinking about his sermon, I say, oh, that's what he meant. You know, he's a young guy, but he's doing good. And then we have an office lady that runs the office, and she's now does our bookkeeping and that kind of thing. And we have to pay for that. We have a structure that we pay $11,000 a month on, trying to get the mortgage paid off. It seems like it goes on and on forever. As an accountant, one of the things I hate is recurring costs. I'd like to see things paid for and done with, you know. But you don't do that when you've got $1.5 million, $2 million structure that you've got a 30-year note on. How many of you heard of Church Development Fund? Anybody heard of them? Church Development Fund is a company that provides finance for buildings. They were the chief financer of the college for many years. They aren't anymore. The college has moved to Wells Fargo. As some of you know, I originally came 7 years ago to the college and was your controller and director of finance. And did that for a couple, 3 years. Then I started teaching and doing the controlling stuff and doing more teaching, more controlling, until finally I thought, I can't do this anymore. So I moved over to academics, where I am now. I teach the business courses. And you guys sleep through them, so you know what I'm talking about. At any rate, one of the things that I wanted to talk to you about today is trust. You know, we have to trust the Lord to provide for us. You know, I get up every morning and I come to school, and when I get up, I trust God's going to take care of me and get me from Fort Worth to Dallas without getting run over. He's going to help me remember my lecture notes when I get into class. All of these different things, I trust the Lord to take care of me. I've done this ever since I became a Christian. I became a Christian when I was an older person. I was in my 30s when I became a Christian. I made an intellectual decision to follow Christ. I wasn't an emotional thing. It wasn't an immature thing. I made the decision. Well, actually, I got married. Back up a little bit. I got married, had a couple of kids, and when they're little tykes, my wife just aggravated the daylights out of me, saying I needed to have them in church. And so I said, I was working on my master's at the time, and I didn't have a whole lot of time to do anything except go to work, go to class, go to work, go to class, go to work, go to class. I worked for Philco Ford in those days. I was in a special group that what we did was, it was during the oil crisis that we had. You guys weren't born then, okay, back in the 70s. How many of you were born after 1973? Almost all of you. See, I graduated from grad school, my master's in 1970. I see you didn't raise your hand. You were probably in diapers, though, in 1973. And I worked in this group for Philco Ford because they had what they called the brain group. It sounds pretty heady, but that was a pun, by the way. But I was pleased to be put in that group because of my analytical abilities. And so I got in the group, and what we would do is, in California, they had a deal where if you had odd plates, you got gas on one day. If you had even plates, you got them on another day. And the service stations, if they had gasoline, would have a green flag out front. If they didn't, they put a red flag out front so that you had to go in and get your gas at a particular time. But at any rate, when I was working on my master's, I would go to work I go to school at 6:30 in the morning, and I had my first class at 7. And then I would go to work and work till 12 o'clock. Then I'd have a class 12 o'clock for the lunch period. Then I'd go back to work. And then at 5 o'clock, I'd leave work, go back to school. I took 3 classes a day, and then I would work till about, go to class, sometimes till around 7. Then a lot of times I'd go back to work and work till 3 or 4 in the morning, then go home, sleep for a couple hours, and go back. My wife and I had a real cool deal where we worked it out that I would write papers on Saturday, and she would type them and edit them on Sunday. And we did this for 2 years to get me through my master's. And it was a blessing because we increased our income. I changed jobs 4 times after that and doubled my salary almost each time. So all I'm telling you about this is so you should get your education and go to grad school if you can. I don't care what your degree's in. But, after she was nagging me all this time, well, you need to go to church. And I said, I tell you what I'll do. I'll make a deal with God and with you that after I get my master's, I will start going to church with you. Well, I did. And I was so fortunate that where I decided to go to church, because how many of you have heard of San Jose Bible College? It's William Jessup, a university out in California now. They've changed their name. They moved from San Jose, and they're up in around Sacramento someplace. They're a sister school. They're a big school. Bryce Jessup was our preacher. And I was fortunate enough to be taken in and mentored by people, giants in the independent Christian movement at the time. And so I really got to learn a lot about different aspects of the church. And, of course, being a bean counter, everybody wants you to be involved in working with the treasury and stuff like that. So I learned early on that, no matter what God gives you, if you give him his share, he takes care of you. He's always done that for me. all through life. I feel blessed that I've had many dreams because I did what I felt God wanted me to do. I'm 70. I could have retired when I was 55. You know, if we're going to count how many beans are in the jar, I could have, you know, then what do? You know, you retire. I was reading something in the paper this morning where a guy retired at 40. So what? Then what does he do? You know, I retired 3 times. I retired from Halliburton. I could have gone home and sit there and watch soap operas all day. Wouldn't that sound exciting? You know, but no, I always wanted to teach. I wanted to teach in college. I have 2 undergraduate degrees. I have 1 in business and economics, business economics and accounting, and I have 2 minors. One's in child psychology, so I can understand the baseball players. And then child psychology, and I have 1 of my minors is in business education, where I learned to teach. In 1971, when I graduated with my bachelor's degree, I was going to be the big teacher. I was going to go out and teach. And what happened was I went and I did my student teaching. This was back during when we had girls were burning their bras and 8-year-old girls were not wearing underwear. And I was teaching typing. And typing, everything was in stages. And you hope they were looking this way like they were supposed to, but every once in a while they turn. And I'd had all of that I could stand. You know, I'm not supposed to be an underwear policeman kind of thing. So I was not really excited about teaching typing because I'm left-handed and this finger's been broken every time I've taken a typing class. I was in the, oh, by the way, right out of high school, I went in the Air Force. And I took 3 typing classes in the Air Force, and something happened to this finger every time I had the class. So I quit taking them after 3 because I was afraid I was going to have my finger cut off or something. But I've learned I can type like this because I look very dainty when I type, kind of thing, because of this finger. It's still good to pick your nose and whatever, but it still works for that, that kind of thing. At any rate, let's talk about trust for a little bit. Whatever you put your trust in becomes your God. Would you agree with that? And what do you put your trust in? In what way? Let me ask you this. We live in a society that's probably the wealthiest it's ever been in history. You know, if you've ever studied the Roman Empire, we always thought they were pretty stout. You know, if you ever read that, The Rise and Fall of the Roman Empire, big, thick book. But, man, it gets you if you read, especially if you're interested in economics and how things happen through government and what it does to people. And I'm thinking about our country. You know, our country, we're the wealthiest there is that's ever been. And I think part of our country's problems is we worship money. We have replaced God with money, you know. And I think that's part of our problem. We've taken our eye off the Savior and put it on the bottom line. And so, when you start thinking about the government's going to take care of you, you're in trouble because God's going to take care of you. The government will not. They will enslave you by what they give you, and then eventually they will turn you to do other things. But I'm really not excited about the way things are going right now in our country. But you know, you need to be able to find some kind of, what's the word I want to use? Let me see if I've written it down here. You know, you want to find hope. You want to find security. You want to find significance. You want to find identity. But you don't want to find it in money. You know, if I were to, out of all my successes in my business, you know, got the fat head and thought it was all me, I tell you, I'd be pretty well lost. I have worked for some of the wealthiest people in Texas. I worked for the Cullen Davis, the Davis family over in Fort Worth. Their company went belly up because they didn't know how to downsize. You know, I worked for a guy in Mississippi who turned out to be a big crook. After I got there, I worked for him for 3 years. He'd never bought a computer, never had a computer. And so while I was putting him on a computer with his general ledgers and all that kind of stuff, I discovered all kinds of crooked stuff that he had done. Do you think he had a 10,000-acre place? He had five ponds on his property, and each one of these ponds had different kinds of fish that he stocked. He had, he built a vertical motel up in part of his land because we bring our customers in for these deer hunts on his property. They would hunt for culls and things like that. We had trap hunts where we would let them shoot quail and stuff like that. You know, it's amazing what money will buy. But you know something? That guy wasn't happy. He was never happy. He was always grumpy. He chewed cigars. You know, he looked old. He was like really, you know, just a little bit, a few years older than I am. But he looked a lot older, you know, than I did. He just was not happy because he didn't have enough money. He wanted more. You know, that kind of thing. So when is it the toughest time, do you think, in your life to trust God? When is the toughest time? You have to speak up because I... When it's going good, they don't put their trust in him, okay? What about the future? I've always found that I found the toughest time to wait for God was when I was waiting for something in the future. You know, I think like when I was working on all these different degrees, I put him aside and I said, I'm going to take care of this. You know, I'm going to take care of this. I look back and I'm very fortunate because, you know, Satan could have come in there and really screwed me up. I have lots of friends that are all screwed up. We went to college during the Vietnam War period. I was in the Air Force. I was stationed in Georgia, and I got discharged and came to California because, my college cost me $4 a semester. $4 a semester, okay. GI Bill paid the rest. I only paid $4. I bought the insurance. You had to buy insurance in California. GI Bill paid everything else. But as I got out of the service, my squadron got shipped to Vietnam, and I had the sergeant that I was friends with. He was blinded. He got shot through the eyes. I had two guys in my outfit were killed. And it kind of woke me up in saying, you know, here I am worrying about the future, and these guys don't have to worry about it anymore, except the blind guy. And I saw him about 7 years ago, and he's happy as a lark. You know, he's can read Braille. He does a lot of computer stuff and all of that. He thought it was a blessing that he got blinded. You know, it shamed me to pieces kind of thing. But trusting God is particularly difficult when you're looking into the future. However, in order for God to truly be your God, we must trust him regardless how counterintuitive. What does counterintuitive mean? Anybody? I'm surprised I put this in the outline.
Can I take a guess at it?
Yes, sir.
Is it like when everything, like our minds tell us that, like our intelligence, our minds, like our intellect, it tells us that we should do things on our own? And like we should trust in our, we should try to act like our own. And you know what I'm saying? It's like if you have nothing, you know, you try try to do things on your own instead of trusting in God. It's kind of like that's what your intellect is telling you. It's like that desperate. Do or die type of idea that you have.
All right, good shot, good try. Let me ask you this then. What's the base word for intuitive? Is it not intuition? So if you have intuition about something, you feel like you know something inside your head, and if it's counter, you go against what you know. Why do we do that? Why do we do that? Especially if we're true believers, why do we often go against that? Why are men particularly scared to death to ask for directions when we're driving? You know, and that carries on in our Christian life too, I think. I think a lot of us are, you know, we think, we got arms like this guy here, you know, that kind of thing. And we think we can do it ourselves. You know, men are terrible about that. You women are not that great either. But especially us men, you know, we're very, think we can really get the hang of that thing. But, you know, being able to give, is really tough, especially if you don't have any money. You know, it's really hard. When we started out, my wife and I started out, I was working for Eckerd's Drugstore, and at the time, and I was making a dollar quarter an hour, but I got 1% of my key, which meant that if I sold something, I got 1% of that. So I sold a lot of stuff. I had two babies during that period of time. I was so broke. One of my schoolmates' mom was an obstetrician. And she said if I could get her 5 silver dollars, she would take care of the baby, when it was born. So I dug around and got 5 silver dollars, bud. And she delivered my first child. I didn't have insurance. It was one of my problems, okay, at the time. Preconditioned and all that kind of stuff. Not like today, I guess. But we still tithed. We still gave money to the church because I had faith that as long as I met my obligation with God, that he would take care of me. My life's always been like that. That's why I feel like I'm blessed in some ways. I could have been destroyed at different times, but the Lord led me away from this or led me. You can't see that at the time. You know, I wish I could tell you that you can. It's a reflex, and I call it a spiritual reflex. It's how you react to given situations, and it makes you change and go in a different direction, and then you look back where you've been, and you see who's in jail and who's not. You know, especially if you're in the business world and you go into accounting and you're the head guy in accounting, there's a lot of opportunities for fraud if you're not careful. You know, there's strict ethics reports and stuff like that that you have to do. So let me ask you here. I've got five or six questions. To what degree do you think our society has made money their God? I gave you my opinion, but what's yours? Don't everybody speak at once. Yes, sir.
I think when we're taught to believe that life is meaningless and there's no purpose, that people are naturally going to throw everything they can into their one life that they get. And in doing so, money naturally becomes
a necessity to get that. You sound like a Marine commercial. I think it's the Marines say, be all you can be, or is it get all you can get? I'm not sure which one. But I think that's what you're talking about, is that we invest so much in our short period of life being on Earth, you know. We're getting where we live longer now. Our quality of life isn't much better at the end than it's ever been, but we push that out. They tell me that being 70 is the new 40, you know. well, don't tell my back that when I get out and work in the yard, you know, that kind of thing, because I feel every day of 70, you know, especially when I have to walk up and down these stairs. That's why I go to the Y and work out, just so I can go up the stairs without breathing hard or fainting. Hey, I fainted in class. Who was in my class? Yeah, Laramie Lynn caught me and kept me from hitting the floor, bless his heart. I was dehydrated was my problem. But so bad things happen to good people. All right. What evidence is there to support your thoughts, you know, on this? I need somebody else to tell me about where you think our country is in regards to our chasing money. How has it affected you? Any of you guys, you can get up and talk a little bit about yourself, you know. How has money affected you? You guys all have negative money, I would imagine. You've got debt, you know, like up to your eyeballs. Yeah, you've got debt and trying to figure out how you're going to get that paid off. Hey, I empathize with you. I got the GI Bill, but I went into service for 4 years to get that. I think our government needs to bring that back so that young men can and women can get their college paid for fully by the government. I think that's an excellent program. But what about you guys? What do you think about our country and money? What do you think about yourselves and money? Do you think what are you going to wind up paying all together by the time you get your degree? How much? Yeah, that'd be a little amount. Most of the colleges, about $150,000 is the average for a 4-year degree. And a lot of colleges are students particularly, are their own worst enemies because they're stretching it out to a 5-year degree, and it just adds more onto the tail end of that. And one of the things that I'll tell you about is that if you do really well with your undergraduate degree, you can get scholarships for your graduate degree. You know, I used to tell my girls when they were going to college, see, I have two daughters. They're in their 40s now, and I have 5 grandchildren. Bless their hearts. They love to play baseball, guys. They're Angels fans. They're so sick. But at any rate, I would not pay their way through college. I would not pay their way through college. What I did was I made them earn it. They had to have a job where they worked. One of them worked for an attorney and one worked for an advertising agency. And I made a deal with them. As long as they got an A, I paid for that class. If they got a B, I paid for half of it. If they got a C, D, or an F, don't talk to me, because I don't want to hear about it. It's on you. And, you know, their GPA just rose like mad. You know, my oldest daughter goofed off in high school and was not a great person, didn't know how to study. So I got my other daughter to teach her how to study. You know, that's one of the getting off money things, but talking about students is, especially when you come to college, you're not used to having to study like this. You know, you're used to getting through college without high school without doing much of anything, quite honestly. You know, I'm amazed you. Some of you do as well as you do. You know, I teach financial management, and I've taught college math here. But don't tell anybody because I'm not qualified. I don't have the credentials to teach math. It's bonehead math. I'm sorry. It's ninth grade. You start off the ninth grade with fractions and all of that kind of stuff, and you build up to where you learn to do financial statements and things like that. What ways has the idolatry of money impacted Christianity and the church? Pardon? Anybody? Bless your heart. I totally agree with you. What he said was, A lot of churches are interested in having edifices rather than something that's Utah. Now, I've got nothing against the Baptist Church over here in Dallas. They just opened a huge campus over here that's just gorgeous. How many of you have seen it on TV and stuff? It's got fountains and all of that stuff. And I keep asking myself, wonder if they'd met in a barn and sent the rest of that money out to feed the poor or something like that, you know. So I think a lot of times churches themselves get caught up in image. Nothing. Image is not anything you can put your arms or hands around. It's something you feel inside. You know, it's more of an emotion, an image is, than what something really is. See, I don't know some of you guys. Some of you look very pious, and I'll bet you're wild when you're not here. You know, that kind of thing. Image. How does consumerism impact your personal trust in God as provider? Consumerism. What are you sold on television all the time? You know, I was telling my marketing class, you know, about the Mustang car. How many of you have a Mustang or have ever driven one? Yeah, me too. I used to have the bathtub, convertible, black, you know, just, it was a great car. Now I drive a little bitty thing that does drive just about like the Mustang. That's my little bitty Mini Cooper out there. If you've seen it. I like small cars and fast ones at that. But I was talking about the Mustang, you know, and in the marketing days, if you ever think about it and you want to go out and Google Ford Mustang and look at the history of it, when they first came out with that car was 1970, around in there, 69. And we used to have our homecoming parade at the JUCO I went to, and we had a manufacturing plant in a small town outside of San Jose called Milpitas. And one of the girls' dad was the plant manager. So when we needed cars for our parades and stuff, he would send all these convertibles. He'd send Mustangs and Thunderbirds and all that kind of stuff. But in those days, if you looked at an advertisement for Mustang, you hardly ever noticed the car, guys, because they weren't selling the cars to you ladies. They never marketed Mustangs to you ladies. They did it to us guys, because they always have a semi-nude woman leaning on the hood, usually a blonde, big buxom blonde in a very small outfit, that kind of thing. They were not selling a car, they were selling sex. And I think that's one of the things that tells about our consumerism. When we look at TV, you look at the advertisements on TV. I was looking kind of to see if what you guys are wearing. You must work at Central Market.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Nice coat. nice store. But I was just looking to see, how many of you are influenced by what you see on TV in terms of going out and buying things? Yeah. How many of you are liars? Everybody else put their hand. Yeah, we're all affected by what we see on TV. Everybody is, you know. I see something. I went to Best Buy the other day, and I was walking through there. I was really just looking for a cable, but I was looking to see what they have new in electronics that I don't have, you know. I've got a laptop, I've got an iPad, I've got an iPhone, I've got an eye toothbrush, an eye toaster, you know, I've got all these eye things and that kind of stuff. So they didn't have anything that I needed. And I was brokenhearted because I just know I need to buy some more electronics and that kind of thing. My wife was pleased that I didn't because she's always after me. But I think consumerism has really affected us as Christians. How many of you have a bass boat? Okay, bass boats, that's good. How many have ski boats? You know, all right, have those kind of things. Well, that's fine, you know, but Most guys your age can't afford stuff like that. So, you know, I have to admit I've had one boat my dad gave me, actually, when I was young and foolish. What do you think giving is so important to God? Why do you think he wants us to give? Very good. You, sir.
I was going to say that it really tests our faith, you know? Like, I was reading, and it said that, you know, we grow in faith and love and all those things. And it's like, it also says that, you know, we should, like, grow and, like, we should be charitable with our giving. Because that's just a way that we show that we know that God can make a way for us.
That's true. Both your answers are very good. One of the things that I have noticed in the accounting world is, you know, we're asked to give 10%, according to the Bible, if you will, and the government wants 14 to 21%, you know, when you pay your taxes. So why are we so upside down? You know, it just really irks me that I have to send more to Washington than I have to send to God. You know, something's wrong with this picture. That didn't mean I only have to give 10%, but because I don't. But that's neither here nor there. But, you know, it just seems to me that something's not right there when that happens. What do you think is the most difficult part of trusting God as your provider? Yeah, especially us guys. We can do it, man. We got the muscles. We got the brains. You know, we can take care of this. But I'll tell you this, until you do trust the Lord, you're by yourself. You know, I was watching TV this morning, and they were talking about these two gals that went out to the field check on their father, and apparently a tractor fallen over on him, or it flipped over. And they picked the tractor up so he could breathe and held it till more people came or whatever to save his life. And I'm just thinking about, trusting God as your provider. I'm thinking how miraculous we are when we really want to do something physically or otherwise. These guys, how many of you could pick up a tractor, you know? Not many of us. Okay, we got one over here that probably could do it. Okay, yeah, put your cape on and fly on over there. Gotcha. All right. So, you know, it's just amazing to me that our number one thing that keeps us from being great, being superb, being miraculous, is that we don't trust the fact that we can do it. We don't have the trust in the individual, our God, Jesus Christ, to allow us to do it. You know, we don't seem to be able to give that part of the trust to God. You know, one of the things that I've noticed, I was our senior minister at our church for quite a while too. I took care of the older people, and I watched lots of them die. You know, at different times, lots of them, and it's a blessing to be there when they pass, especially older Christians. You know, they show the trust for where they're going to go, who they're going to see, and how they're going to be, and by doing that, it gives me faith, it gives me trust in Jesus Christ, trust in the Scriptures that tell me that after I go, where I'm going to be. Here lately, we've had some personal testimonies of people that have died and come back. They have I think it was a nurse, died on the operating table. She was clinically dead for 9 minutes. 9 minutes. And claims she saw all of these different sights. She's telling everybody what she saw. pretty exciting, you know. Not that I want to die right away, but I've never been afraid of dying. Never. Not in 35 years have I been afraid of dying. I know where I'm going to go. I know who I trusted with my assets when I was here. I know how he's taken care of me, and I know how he can take care of you. So be smart. You know, be smart with what you do with your funds. Be smart in how you worship. Be smart in how you work. And study, man. Make those grades. Everybody here should be A students. You guys should be blowing the socks off this place. We don't have a dummy in the class. Well, we might have a couple. Now, I was going to say, Barnes isn't here. So I can't say. Rick's not here, so I can't pick on him. But at any rate, I want to thank you for putting up with me. It was a pleasure being here. And did everybody sign the roll sheet? Where is the pad? There. All right. I guess you guys just click in on the door. I was thinking I had to take it written, but I got you anyway. So thank you very much. And I tell you what, let's bow our heads. Our gracious Heavenly Father, I'm so excited to be in front of these students today. I'm so excited to see the potential that I see in front of me of each and every one of them. Father, I just pray that they will trust in you, trust in your word, trust in those professors that are trying to fill their heads with the knowledge that they need to improve their lives in the future and in the now. So, Father, we just love you for the way that you take care of us, the way you've prepared for us in the future through your Son, Jesus Christ, who went to the cross for us. I just pray all this in his name. Amen. All right. Good to see you guys again. Did you? All right. I noticed you didn't sleep, so I appreciate that. I wouldn't let you. Okay. Oh, that's fine. I forgot about that. I'm so used to. I usually meet my group over in Chow Hall. How do you turn this stupid thing on? Oh, well. Gotta come in and do it, I guess.